Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored, as usual, by Audible.com, and they have loads of audiobooks, and they want you to download one for free. That's the weird thing. They actually want you to have one free. They're just like, we've got too many audiobooks, and we need to give them away to listeners to Luke's English Podcast. So if you'd like to download one, just go to audibletrial.com/teacherluke. You can get any audiobook you want. All the details are on my website. That's it for this little bit of promotion. Now let's begin the episode. Here we go.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. I hope you're all well. I hope you're fine. I hope you're doing okay. I hope the weather is all right. It's not very good here, but that doesn't matter because this is audio and it really doesn't matter that much, does it, in the scheme of things? Paul Taylor is with me today. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Now, before we start, Paul, do you think I could just have a word with you in my office?
Yeah. It sounds serious, but yeah, let's...
It's all right. It's nothing to worry about. Just take a seat.
Okay.
Basically, Paul, I just wanted to touch base with you just in order to kind of get all our ducks in a row, okay? Mm. So let's peel back the onion and have a good look under the bonnet on this podcast situation, okay? Because at the end of the day, you know, we've brought you on board here at Luke's English Podcast because, you know, we think that you bring a lot to the table, and I think that impacts favourably on our key market component players. And I think this is something that we can leverage to bring about greater penetration, ultimately pushing our growth potential above and beyond just the low-hanging fruit and into the stratosphere on this one, okay? Mm. I'm talking streamlining, I'm talking synergy, and with yourself on board, we can push the strategic staircase all the way up to 11, all right? I'm talking 110%, mate. After all, that's part of our DNA here at Luke's English Podcast, isn't it? We're all about cascading relevant information and branching out across new frontiers and Web 2.0 platforms. And that's why I thought I'd just reach out to you, just offline like this, just so that we could have a bit of downtime to go over this, get a helicopter view, and just generally make sure no one drops the ball going forwards, okay? I think you know what I'm talking about. Feedback says that restructuring has been working really well. I mean, clearly, this isn't a come-to-Jesus moment or anything. No, far from it. And in fact, I think there's no need for us to do much more of a drill down on this one, or it'll just turn into a case of paralysis by analysis. So let's keep our eyes on the prize, okay, Paul? Now, wait, don't say anything. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, but Luke, how can we truly push the envelope and come up with genuinely competitive deliverables across multiple platforms to upscale our market diversity moving forwards? And that's what I like about you, Paul. You don't beat around the bush, you just say it like it is, you know? So just to finish up here, I'd just like to say, don't let the grass grow too long on this one, okay? What I'm looking for is for you to just have a get together with your team, unpack these issues, have an idea shower, really just think outside the box, okay? Blue sky thinking. And then by the end of play, just shoot me over an exit strategy that will allow for true organic growth, maximizing our potential for upstream stratcom. So if you could just action that, and then we'll run it up the flagpole, you know, just put the record on and see who dances. And then ideally, we can look to open the kimono and truly take it to the next level going forwards, firing on all cylinders. Okay, Paul?
Oh, sorry, were you talking to me?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking on the phone to your boss there. That's I didn't understand a word of what you were saying, Luke. What are you talking about?
Basically, that all could be explained. That could be...
You sound like my old boss at Apple.
Really?
Or my old, yeah.
Well, all I'm trying to say is it's nice to have you on the podcast again.
Oh, that's a good call out.
That's basically what I was trying to say.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for inviting me back on the podcast.
You're welcome. But so what, listeners, what you just heard there was me using a lot of what we call corporate jargon or management speak or just bollocks, okay? If you didn't understand it all, then I do you know, in this episode, we do plan to come back and explain all of those things for you. Also, you can see everything I just said written on the page for this episode at teacherluke.co.uk. So we're talking about management speak or corporate jargon. That's the focus of the episode. Okay. Now, so you didn't understand anything I said there, Paul?
No, I understood most of it. Yeah, it was just for comedic purposes.
Right. Okay.
I was saying that I didn't understand because, it's one of those things that if you are, I guess, learning English, even if you're not learning English, I remember when I started hearing that stuff for the first time, I had no idea what was going on. Even I spoke English, and sometimes you have to ask what those silly phrases mean. I find Americans use it a lot more than English people.
Really?
Yeah. In my time in Apple, English people tended to be the ones that were always complaining about those words and phrases, and the ones who were in the US were the ones that used it more.
Okay.
In my experience.
But basically you heard a lot of this kind of management speak or corporate jargon when you were working at Apple then, did you?
Yeah, a huge amount.
And what do you think of it when you hear it?
I liked your description of it being bollocks.
Yeah.
I hate it so much because it's I used to work on a global team, so we had people from all different countries, and I would make a pretty big effort to not use those words.
Buzzwords.
Yeah, buzzwords, terms that they mean stuff, but also there's an easy way of saying it, or there's a real English, normal conversational way of saying it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for the people on our team who weren't native English speakers, it would annoy me on their behalf that people would use these phrases, and it was just annoying. It's just like, well, just say what you want to say instead of, you know...
Right.
Not sugarcoating it, but putting something around it that's not actually... Instead of saying reach out, oh, thanks for reaching out, just say thanks for contacting me.
Right.
That's what normal human beings say.
Yeah.
It's thanks for sending me an email, thanks for calling me, thanks for contacting me. But no, thanks for reaching out. You didn't reach out.
Or just wanted to touch base with you, Paul. Yeah. What do you mean touch base? Which base?
To me, that sounds like baseball.
Doesn't it? Shouldn't it just
like
be I just wanted to talk to you.
Yeah.
Rather than touch base with you.
Yeah. Just wanted to talk to you. I wanted to catch up on the last week's events. I just wanted to touch base about last week. Fuck off.
I just wanted to touch base offline, which basically means I just wanted to talk to you with a coffee
in private. That on conference calls, that was all a nightmare. We'd be on conference calls, it'd be like 10, 15 of us, maybe 20 of us, and somebody would bring up a topic that wasn't really relevant to the 15, 20 people that were on the call, and somebody would be like, oh, what about this thing? And then the other person who's hosting the call is like, oh, let's talk about that offline. As in, like, let's talk about it not on this conference call, but separately one-on-one, rather than in a group setting.
So do you think that there's a better phrase than saying, in a conference call, is there a better thing to say rather than, let's talk about that offline? What's a better alternative?
Let's just talk about that at a different time, one-on-one. Or, I mean, yeah, offline just means, they're not even online. They're not on the internet. It's a conference call.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I guess you're on the line, but it's annoying.
But the thing that...
I've heard that in meetings as well. I've heard that in a physical meeting where there's 15 people around a boardroom type table and somebody brings up a topic and they're like, oh, well, let's take that offline.
Yeah.
Well, no one's online right now. We're sitting around a table. Shut up.
Okay, to give everyone an example of what I'm talking about here, I did find a little video on YouTube, and this is produced by CNN, the American news station. And this is a sketch called Annoying Office Lingo, and it basically just gives us a chance to hear some corporate jargon or management speak or annoying lingo being used in an office environment. So let's just have a listen to that.
Yeah, you'll hear a little ding, and that's just because there's a little green tick on the screen that you can't see that is saying, yes, that's every time you hear ding, it basically means that's office jargon.
Okay, and we will go through a lot of these things in this episode later on, so here we go.
Ah, Chris, just the person. We need to touch base later.
I'll ping you an email when I'm free.
I really want to see best practice on this one.
Yes, we'll be taking it to the next level.
Good man. Oh, I need you to reach out to New York immediately.
Richard, my idea is a win-win situation.
Good. Okay, so we've now picked the low-hanging fruit and the issue's on my radar, but we need to really run it up the flagpole to see what happens next.
Look, can you two take this offline?
Okay, just a few examples there of annoying office lingo. Any of those, do you remember any of those, Paul?
Yeah, a lot of them. Although I felt that it was almost a laboured, the beginning was kind of like weird. There was a couple of things where they got it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the first one was like, I'll ping you an email.
Right.
No, it was just, I'll ping you. Like, ping just means either email, message, text, iCal. So it was just like, I'll ping you later, or ping me.
So not I'll ping you an email, but just simply I'll ping you.
Yeah, I'll ping you.
Meaning I'll get in touch with you.
Exactly, yeah. It's another way of saying reach out. Instead of saying like, oh, we should meet to talk about our development plan next week. And you go, oh yeah, just ping me.
All right, okay.
And the other one was best practices. We used to use that all the time.
Best practice?
Yeah, the way he used it, I've never heard it used that way, where it was, where he goes, I need, the exact phrase I think he said was like, oh,
I need you to give, what was it? What did he say?
Yeah, it didn't feel.
Let's hear it again.
Yeah.
Let's just hear that beginning part again. He talks about best practices.
Ah, Chris, just the person. We need to touch base later. I'll ping.
We need to touch base
later.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Right. So that's a classic, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then he says, later. I'll ping you an email, but you think it's I'll ping
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's just ping. Okay. You don't need to.
Base later.
I'll ping you an email when I'm free.
Right. I'll ping you when I'm free, it should be. Then,
yeah.
Maybe. Here's the one that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to see best practice on this one.
Yeah. I really want to see best practice on this one. What does he mean?
Well, the way I've always used it, or I've always heard it used, is like, what are the best practices around this topic? You know, whether it's, let's say we're, I don't know, delivering a training session, or what are the best practices around delivering a training session? What are the best practices in recording a podcast? Which basically means, what are the top tips? Best practices,
or the best ways to do it.
Yeah,
and that's the sort of the original use of that expression. What are the best practices?
Mm.
Meaning, what are the best approaches or the best ways of doing it?
Yeah.
But he's saying, I really want to see best practice. So somehow that's more irritating.
Yeah,
it
might be. Well, it's. I think so. And what might. I'm sure there's like a standard list of these, and then each company takes their own. And if this is produced by CNN, it might be CNN's way of saying, you know, their thing.
Don't use these. What you mean, CNN have a list of...
Well, they might, like, best practice might be the term that someone's heard somewhere, and whoever works for that company, like, imports it into their job. We used to have, it was just like every year there was a new word, or every 6 months there was a new, or every quarter, if we're doing jargon. There was a new word, that it was a new buzzword that somebody heard somewhere, not necessarily in a meeting, but maybe, like, off something else, and then they've changed the meaning or made their own meaning about it.
What you mean is that either formally or informally, some of these buzzwords just get entered into the vocabulary of the corporate culture. Mm. And so it could be that CNN have actually published internal documents that include these phrases. They're not telling the staff to use the phrases, but the phrases have just become the general buzzwords to
maybe
explain certain things that CNN are trying to do.
Yeah, or it's that's just the way they use the term best practice.
Like within CNN.
Yeah, within CNN, their way of using the term best practice is like, I want to really see best practice on this.
Right.
Whereas for us, it was, what are the best practice? It was always plural. It was never singular. It was never, what is a... Well, you could say, what is a best practice? But you would generally say, what are the best practices?
Right. So normally it's a countable noun. You know, what are the best practices?
Yeah, exactly.
And he's now converted it into an uncountable noun.
Exactly.
I want to see best practice. Okay. Yeah. All right.
One of the things, actually, funnily, about this whole thing is, and this is going back to when I first did the podcast, and I had the whole idea of Taylor's top tips.
Right.
While we were making tea before the podcast. Taylor's top tips came from when I worked, and I hated the term best practices.
Ah.
So I would, like, if I was delivering, because I would deliver training to people who wanted to become trainers. So I was doing like a train the trainer kind of course.
Mm.
The master trainer. I was the master Jedi trainer.
Jedi, you were Yoda basically.
Yeah.
But taller.
Taller, and I could speak proper English.
Right.
And so I would train people, and I would just put a thing. We used to use flip charts, you know, the the big white papers where you'd create a list.
And then you have that awesome moment where you flip the paper over.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even tear it off. Did you ever tear the paper off?
We had the best ones. So you could tear them off, but they were basically big post-it notes. So you could tear it off and then you could just stick it on a wall without having to use tape because the top had already... Imagine a post-it note, but the size of a flip chart.
This is why Apple rule the world, because you've got sticky flip charts. That's the key, isn't it? I wonder if Android have got sticky flip charts or Samsung. Anyway.
So we used to have a section where we would talk about best practices, and everyone would share their best practices of delivering training. You know, open body language, ask open questions, this kind of stuff. And instead of putting best practices as the title on the flip chart, I wrote top tips. Right. And then somebody in my training class was like, oh, Taylor's top tips. And that just became a thing inside of Apple.
I see.
Which was when I would tell somebody a top tip on training, it'd be like, oh, Taylor's top tips into this thing that you inspired me. Long story short, best practices, we use it differently than CNN.
So, yeah, long story short, instead of saying, what are our corporate best strategies for in-company training, you said, right, what are your top tips for delivering training
sessions?
Exactly,
and top tips probably could be included in corporate jargon maybe as well.
Maybe, but it's clear and short and efficient and simple and easy to understand, whereas best practices sounds pretentious.
Yeah.
It sounds like the person is just trying to make themselves sound more important and more intelligent than they really are.
Yeah.
And this is probably the point that people... This is what makes people so annoyed about this kind of corporate language, is that often it's unnecessary and often it seems to be just a chance to try and make yourself look important.
Yeah. I think it's that. And I think it's also people that get annoyed about it who aren't English speakers, because... none of those are very easily translatable.
Right.
You know, like best practices, we would have that written in some of our training guides. And then when those training guides got translated to French or Spanish, and I was reading them, it would literally be translated as best practices, which doesn't make any sense in any other... So I think that was the thing that a lot of people on our team who aren't American would get annoyed at, was if it's like, oh, reach out. How do you say reach out in French? You don't. You just say contact. So why don't we just... stop using overly complicated words when we work for a company that's supposed to be a global company.
So not only is this language just irritating to native speakers in many cases, it's also mystifying and confusing for non-native speakers.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe I can just simplify a little bit and just define a few terms here at this point in the episode before we go any further. So corporate jargon, management speak. What is jargon? That's the first question. So here's a definition of the word jargon from the Cambridge Dictionary for Learners of English. And according to them, jargon obviously is a noun. It's an uncountable noun. And it means words and phrases used by particular groups of people that are difficult for other people to understand. And so we hear things like legal jargon. That's all of the legal language that only lawyers understand, technical jargon, medical jargon, even English teaching jargon. For example, English teachers, especially after they've just taken the Delta exam qualification, if they've done their Delta, often they'll be full of all of this kind of jargon, and they'll be saying, you know, first of all, I want to activate the student's schemata and then facilitate the non-deductive process of lexical acquisition. which basically means I just want to make the students think about the subject and then give them a chance to work out the meaning of the new words.
Right.
Okay. Also, we get corporate jargon, which is just the sort of language that comes out in the corporate world, or the jargon that is used in the work of managing other people.
Hmm.
Okay, and that brings us on to corporate jargon or management speak.
Yeah,
and so management speak. Here's a definition of management speak, also from the Cambridge Dictionary. Speak normally is a verb, but here it's being used as a noun, so management speak. And this refers to workplace words and expressions that are used by managers and in management theory, but may not be understood by ordinary people. So it's basically managers in the corporate world using certain phrases and certain expressions that most ordinary people can't understand. And it gives an example of relationship marketing, which apparently is management speak for selling products by offering discounts and benefits to existing customers. that whole thing is wrapped up in the term relationship marketing. And if you don't know about, you know, management speak or the world of corporate, you know, management, then you're not going to know what relationship marketing is, and it's just going to sound weird. So basically, corporate jargon, management speak, the same thing. It's just words and expressions used in the corporate world that outside of that context don't really mean anything. And so the question I'd like to just look at now, I think we understand what it is, we've looked at some examples of it, and we've talked briefly about what's wrong with it, but maybe we can just think about why people use management speak. Now, what do you think, Paul? Why is it that you know, people in Apple or CNN or other companies are going around saying, you know, I want to touch base with you in order to get all our ducks in a row, and in order to ensure best practice going forward? Why is it that they're saying stuff like this?
I think it's going back to what you said earlier on. Like, people just want to make themselves sound better than they are. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know why. I'd love to know who the first person... one of the words that we used to say quite often was impactful.
Impactful.
Which isn't a word.
Well, impact is the original word.
Yeah.
Impact, like, for example, when a meteor hits the Earth.
Yeah.
It impacts.
So one of the impactful words we used to say was impactful, and it became a buzzword, and it probably still is. And it annoyed me because I looked it up, and it wasn't a word.
Can you give me an example of?
Yeah,
how
it would be like
it?
You know, the use of technology in our lives is really impactful.
Okay.
Meaning it has a lot of impact. So
right.
I think, you know, like you would say, yeah, I mean, you know, the use of an iPhone in the medical industry has been very impactful, or the iPhone has been very impactful in the...
So it annoyed you when you realized that it wasn't a word.
Yeah. Okay. I thought it was a word, and then I looked it up and it was like, no, it's not a word. And I just thought, well, why are we using that?
But what's the alternative to saying impactful then?
Having impact, I guess, or it has impacted... you'd probably just have to create a more complicated English phrase. In which case, it's all right, because my belief is that language is used for communication, and if you can find a better way of communicating easily, more efficiently, then go for it. You know, I always have the discussion with people where they're like, "Oh, English is losing its thing because people can't speak or write English anymore. We're losing the language and all this kind of stuff." Or French people say the same thing about French, that English is being added to the French language as anglicisms, and we're losing our language. And my opinion is, so what?
Yeah.
Like, a language has always evolved. It always will evolve. And it's like you go back to Shakespeare's time. Everyone spoke differently.
Mm-hmm.
And if they listen to us now, like if they listen to a person who was highly educated from Cambridge right now, they would think he sounded ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it is. And we just have to, you know, understand that language will evolve. And that's just the part of life.
Mm.
And
so I think there are two sides to this situation. Mm. On one side, you know, yes, it seems very annoying when this kind of language is being used. And there is an argument to say that some of it is unnecessary and redundant and sort of bad English, let's say. There is an argument for that, which is quite well backed up by lots of people.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, there is just the sense that, well, people should not get too upset about certain new language coming along, because in the grand scheme of things, that's as you said, that's just the way that language develops over time, that it's a tool, and the tool gets adapted and changed depending on the, you know, the reasons it's being used.
Mm.
And if we get a word like impactful, in fact, that's quite a useful word in the end.
Yeah.
But it sounds annoying to us because we're like, how dare you? We value the language, you know, we naturally have a lot of value to our language. And so when people sort of change it and adapt it, you kind of, there's a slight sense of resistance of like, you can't just change the language. That's arrogant and it's pretentious, but that is what has always happened.
I felt that English is a very difficult language to learn because, the spelling is just out of this world. Like, how do you, you know, and I can't remember in what year it was, but Spanish went through a reform where they just reformed the whole language, the whole spelling of it.
Yeah.
So now Spanish, you read it as it is. There's only one pronunciation for each letter, and that's just it. And if it's written away, it will always be pronounced that exact same way. And in a way, I feel like English needs that at some... Well, I mean, it'll probably happen at some stage, but...
But who's going to decide that? Because in France, for example, they have the Académie Française.
Yeah, in Spain, the equivalent, which is Real Academia, which is the Royal Academy.
Okay.
They made that decision, I can't remember when, to be like, right, we're changing the language, and the spelling reform is just going to... People are going to resist, but it's just the way it is. And it's like when my parents get angry about the youth writing U. Like, you, how are you? And they write how, the letter R, and then the letter U.
Yeah.
Which is, they're like,
it's the death of the English language.
You can't speak proper English. But to go back to your question about why people use it, I don't know what the origins of these phrases or this jargon was, but I think people now, as they go into businesses, they start using it subconsciously. I used to speak this. As much as it pained me, I used to hear myself say these words, because you just get used to it. If you're used to like being in business meetings or all this kind of stuff, you hear the words, and in order to communicate, you just end up using the words again, and everyone kind of in that same environment ends up being like parrots and, mm-hmm. and imitating each other. Not necessarily for any specific reason of being like, I want to show off. It just happens that people, if you grow up... if you're at school and a new buzzword comes at school, instead of saying cool, remember when I was a kid, people used to say cool, but then at some stage, the word dark came about to mean cool.
Like, that's dark.
That's dark, or that's sick. And then for about a year, everyone started using that same thing. But it was, I think a lot of it is subconscious.
So it's actually a very complicated issue, and it relates to other areas that we could talk about. For example, the way that language develops and people's attitudes to the development of language, and also questions about, whether... it's right for there to be an academic sort of institution that tells people the right and wrong way to use language, or whether it's more democratic to follow the trends in language. Briefly, in France and Spain, they have an academy which says this is right and this is wrong. Mm-hmm. In the UK, we have probably Cambridge University, maybe a few other academic institutions, that instead of just having a meeting and deciding this is right and this is wrong, what they actually do is they study massive amounts of data, basically samples of language. They have these things called like concordances, corpora, big collections of samples of spoken and written English, and they're very complete. And what they do is they stick them all into computer programs, and then they work out the frequency of language being used. And based on that frequency, they will then write their grammars of English and dictionaries and things. And the grammar of English, the Cambridge grammar of English, will follow what is generally being used in the world, probably by native speakers. And it's not the other way around. See what I mean? It's not like the academics are saying, this is right and this is wrong because we say so. In fact, they're saying this is right and this is wrong because that's what everyone does.
That's what everyone's,
yeah. So that arguably is a more democratic process.
I like that, yeah.
But at the same time, you could say, but it's frustrating because we don't get a sense of, who's in control of this language. And it seems annoying when people just sort of, for example, when something that's wrong enters common usage, that seems to make everyone really unhappy. But that's another issue that we could come back to. But I just want to talk about this question of why people use management speak before we go into some of the specific examples of management speak that generally people hate. So information about corporate jargon from a Guardian article. So I found some articles online about this subject. Most of the articles had titles like, the 10 most hated corporate jargon, or 15 examples of management speak that you hate.
Yeah,
it's usually that kind of thing.
One's going, the 10 best uses, the 10 things that you love about corporate speak.
Most of the time, people just hate corporate speak, it seems. But anyway, here's some information from a Guardian article, which also includes reference to something called the Plain English Campaign. And I don't know if you'd ever heard of the Plain English Campaign.
I hadn't, no.
Well, this is a movement in the UK which has been going since 1979. It's actually a very well-established movement. And their objective is to promote plain, simple and clear English, which is free of jargon and also free of, by saying free of, I mean doesn't include. So clear, plain English, which doesn't have jargon and doesn't have misleading public information. And it's the Plain English campaign has been supported by numerous well-known and very well-respected public figures, including heads of state such as Tony Blair, Margaret Thatcher, and the Prince of Wales. Did I say respected public figures? I did. Anyway, here's what The Guardian wrote about the subject of management speak. And it said this. The Plain English campaign says that many staff working for big corporate organisations find themselves using management speak as a way of disguising the fact that they haven't done their job properly. Some people think that it's easier to bluff their way through by using long, impressive sounding words and phrases, even if they don't know what they mean, which is telling in itself. So basically that means that people seem to use management speak in order to make themselves sound more important, yeah, as you said. And the article went on to say, furthermore, a recent survey by Institute of Leadership and Management revealed that management speak is used in almost two-thirds of offices, with nearly a quarter considering it to be a pointless irritation. Thinking outside the box, which had 57%, going forward, which was 55%, and let's touch base, 39% in this study, were identified as the top three most overused pieces of jargon. All right. Now, have you ever heard of bullshit bingo?
No, but I think I know the concept is where you create a bingo card with all the bullshit phrases.
What's bingo? Just to clarify.
Oh yeah, bingo is a great game that is overly played in the UK by elderly people.
Right,
where people sit and I guess it's a social thing, and they have a little card in front of them with a bunch of different numbers, and then there's somebody at the front of the room called a bingo caller that will shout out numbers and try and make them rhyme or do something funny. Like they'll say. And the idea is they'll call out numbers, and if you have the same numbers that it's kind of like lottery,
yeah,
but in live, you don't scratch off. And so somebody calls out these numbers, if you have in live, yeah, on direct, do you know what I mean?
French. There's a bit of French in there, live.
Just anyway. Live.
So there's a guy calling out the numbers.
Yeah, and then you check off the numbers on your little card, and if you've got all the numbers, you stand up and you shout, bingo!
And then you win like a crap prize or some money, yeah, or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
So when you're playing bingo, you're just listening out for your numbers, and when you hear them, you cross them off, and you've got to get like four numbers and you win.
Yeah.
But bullshit bingo
is instead of doing it with numbers, you do it with these phrases. So okay. There's been a couple of times where I've been on a conference call, and me and a friend of mine who's also on the conference call, we have created a list of phrases like going forward, reach out.
Touch base,
pipeline, roadmap, things like that.
Yeah.
And as soon as we've heard them, we cross them off, and then we shout bingo at the end.
Okay. And this is actually done secretly.
Yeah.
So it's like when people go into meetings or corporate, what do you call it? Conference calls.
Conference calls.
In order to just try and enjoy it a bit more, they're secretly playing a game, yeah, of bullshit bingo. And yeah, okay.
I love it, bullshit bingo.
So you actually used to play bullshit bingo?
Yeah, I've played it a couple of times, yeah.
All right. Okay, good. So I just wanted to kind of go through the arguments again. I think this is important just to establish exactly how we feel about the subject of management speak. And so it's clear from, you know, what that Guardian article said is that a lot of people find it to be annoying and pointless. But is there actually anything wrong with management speak? And isn't this just the language of work? I'm sure that some people actually believe that management speak is useful and important. So let me just say a couple of things. One of them is that people need to use complex language to talk about complex specialist things, don't they? But sometimes I think that jargon is used to build power structures rather than just to achieve tasks. For example, in legal English, in contracts, you'll read a lot of legal terminology, which is so difficult to understand that it doesn't actually help the parties to the contracts.
Mm.
So in any contract, you've got the two business people who are doing the contract and then the two lawyers who've written the contract. And the lawyers might write it in such complicated legal terminology that the business people don't even understand what's written in the contract.
Yeah. Or the whole reason they need a lawyer,
yeah,
is because they can't read it. Like somebody would give me a contract and I won't understand it, so then I have to hire a lawyer.
Yeah.
So they're kind of making, you know, they're self-sustaining their own business.
Yeah, so arguably lawyers may, and not just lawyers, but you know, many other people, and they might not even do it without, they might do it even without realizing they're doing it. but perhaps lawyers arguably fill contracts or legal documents with legalese, which is basically legal jargon, in order to make sure that they are then indispensable to their clients, possibly even justifying their very high fees, as if to say, look, you know, you need us lawyers because you can't understand this document that we wrote.
Yeah. Well, that's 100. I mean, that's just a good example of probably both of our personal lives. Addie sends my girlfriend, she sends me text to or contracts to correct her English.
Right.
I don't know why I should be correcting her English, because my English is terrible, as we have found out on previous episodes of Luke's English Podcast.
It's not really.
But sends me emails to correct her English, and I read the emails, and I haven't got a clue. I don't know what half of the stuff, it just makes no sense, and I'm just like, I don't understand what you're writing. Not because the English is bad, just because it's got this jargon. And yeah, sometimes I think if it was made easier, then clients wouldn't necessarily need lawyers because it's to translate the bullshit.
There is an argument for that. So similarly, managers might use management speak to make themselves sound more important, to make them seem more confident or impressive or more expert. And this really is a sort of lack of sincerity. You know, that's maybe one of the reasons people don't like it, because they feel like there's something insincere or disingenuous about this use of language.
Definitely.
It sounds like self-important BS, and that's what's annoying when we're just trying to get things done. So arguments for and against. So an argument for corporate jargon is that some phrases are actually pretty useful and accurate, like possibly, what was the one that
impactful.
You meant? Impactful. And that there's really nothing wrong with using them, and that's just the nature of language, that, you know, new phrases come about and, you know, let's just use them if they're useful. And it's just pedantic and uptight to get so annoyed about them. For example, going forward arguably is quite descriptive, and it's quite useful because it is quite positive. It's like, you know, we need to try to raise our sales going forward, which arguably you could say that's good, because it's like saying we need to raise our sales in the future, but going forward suggests some sense of progress and positivity.
I just hate the phrase. I don't know why, but it's because it is so impactful and going forward,
they seem to be quite
descriptive. Actually pretty good, but I still hate them both, and I don't know why.
And you're not alone. And you're not alone. There are many, many people who agree with you, and that's maybe what's interesting about this. That why do people take against this kind of language so much? And as we've already said, I think I'm repeating myself now, as I often do on the podcast. But here's the argument against sloppy cliches or impenetrable jargon and meaningless redundant language. Doesn't help proper communication, and it can just be used to distract attention away from the real work that has to be done. And also, it irritates so many people, and maybe that is a reason alone to just look further at this subject. I do have some comments from people. Here's a comment which is which I found on the Plain English campaign website.
Right.
Here's a comment. So this is actually from Margaret Thatcher, and she said, human relationships depend on communication. Bad writing is a barrier to communication, and when a large organization such as the government tries to communicate with the man and woman in the street, the scope for misunderstanding is enormous, and too often clarity and simplicity are overwhelmed by pompous words, long sentences, and endless paragraphs. And she said, if we all wrote in plain English, how much easier and efficient life would be. It's no exaggeration to describe plain English as a fundamental tool of good government. And other things, like someone else said, here's a reader of The Guardian who commented by saying, no one wishes to be reactionary and oppose all linguistic evolution. For example, the efforts in France to protect their language, he says, are absurd and rightly the butt of much ridicule. However, Lucy Kellaway, she's a journalist who wrote about corporate language.
Okay.
Lucy Kellaway usefully points out how much of these recent changes are intended to deceive and mislead people. And most of the phrases are merely empty, but some are deliberately dishonest and designed to distort meaning. And she takes her examples from the business world, but this kind of malevolent misuse of language is at the heart of political correctness and so on. So, okay, few different things. Many people hate it, but do you think that my learners need to know this language?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're going to learn English, I mean, it depends what your motivation for learning English is. If you're learning English just to be able to hang out with English-speaking friends and chat with them down the pub over a pint and watch the football, then probably not.
Yeah.
But most people, I think, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that most people learn English because they are thinking about getting a better job, which means that they'll have to speak English, or yep. go and live in an English-speaking country, which means that they'll be working in that English-speaking country. Yep. And so, because if you're going to go work, I mean, obviously, some of this corporate jargon is just very for corporate jobs, you know, where you work in an office. But, you know, a lot of jobs are working in an office. Like, if you work in a restaurant as a waiter or as a barman or whatever, then you might not come across those words, in which case, I wouldn't worry too much about them. But if you're thinking, oh, I want to go work for, you know, a company where I will be sitting in an office with other people, then you're bound to hear these phrases. And I think it can be a big barrier to evolving within a Anglophone company if you don't start using them.
Yeah.
Or at least understand them. And yes. play, and you know, we had the case where there were some people on our team that weren't English native speakers, mm-hmm. and after 4 years, they still didn't really understand these phrases, and they didn't really make much effort to understand them either.
Yeah,
and
because they probably hated them as well.
Probably, yeah. And it meant that they,
they didn't make much progress. Because
I think the language
became a barrier. I mean, I've met many, many people from lots and lots of countries who do business with British and Americans. Mm. You know, I've taught English in companies and things like that, and I still do. And they say that they often struggle to penetrate the idiomatic language used by native speakers of English. And a lot of it will be this kind of corporate language. So this is an issue which is actually, this is an issue which affects native speakers and non-native speakers. Because native speakers should really try to cut down on it or try and make their English more plain and simple. But also for non-native speakers, you need to know this kind of stuff just so that you at least can follow that difficult conference call.
Yep.
Or just to be at least aware of the existence of this language and to be aware of the fact that native speakers too get confused and annoyed by it. Mm. Should it be banned? Well, that goes back to the question of who's in charge of the language. And I personally, I'm reluctant to say that language should be banned or controlled. That doesn't really go along with the way I like to see language as a sort of a thing that develops on its own. So I don't think that it's necessary to step in with some rules and say, you can't use these phrases anymore. I think anyway, it's worth just being aware of it. And for learners of English,
I think I was running a company, if I was the CEO of my own company, I would ban those words.
Would you really?
Yeah, because, well, it depends what kind of company it was. But in theory, it would be a global company. And I know what it's like to not understand. And so I wouldn't want my employees who are not English speakers to have to struggle. So I would just say, like, all of you stop using this bullshit language so that they don't understand.
That's a dangerous move, because then you now have to make value judgments about individual items of language. And, you know, you might be wrong about some of them. You might find that by banning some of the words, you actually make life much more difficult for some of your staff.
Maybe.
And by being dogmatic and saying you can do this and you can't do that, it's actually restricting.
I wouldn't be like a dictator about it. I'd put like a swear jar. You know, when you sometimes you have those little, when you're a kid, sometimes your parents will put a thing where you have to put in like 50 cents mm-hmm. every time you say the word shit.
Okay.
So I'd put a jar in that would be the corporate jargon jar.
Right.
That sounds good.
Corporate jargon jar.
The corporate jargon jar.
Do you
jar?
Have to put 50 cents in every time you say the expression corporate jargon jar as well?
Yeah, you probably have to put a euro in for that. But
you
then
call it Jar Jar. Jar Jar Binks.
Jar Jar.
Because everyone hates Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then the money in there would go to buying drinks at the end of the week at the pub.
Okay. That's it. So you're encouraging people to use
it. Yeah, I wouldn't be like,
English.
Don't ever use it. Just be like, hey, there's people on this team that are Italian and Russian and whatever. And, you know, they're having a hard time. So let's just use plain English.
Right. Okay.
And if you don't, then the drinks are on you.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Hello, listeners. This is Luke. I'm just pausing the podcast. How is the episode for you so far? Are you managing to keep up with all of this? It's quite a quick conversation and the subject is a little bit in depth, but I certainly hope you've been managing to follow what we're saying and that you find it useful as well as relevant to the world of learning English. I've decided to pause the podcast at this point because our conversation goes on for a little bit longer. In fact, the total time for the episode is about 1 hour and 25 minutes. So I thought that I would just slice it in half at this moment. And so that is basically the end of episode one, or part one of this two-part series. In the second part, we will go through lots of the examples that you heard me use at the beginning of this episode. So that's all those things like, I just wanted to touch base with you in order to get all our ducks in a row moving forwards. So we actually, in the next one, we'll go through all of the language that you've heard in this one, specifically breaking it down, making sure that you understand exactly what they mean, and also talking about whether they're genuinely really bad examples of language or if they're pretty much acceptable ones as well. So stay tuned, and the next episode should be available for you to listen to very, very soon, and that'll be that, okay? As ever, leave your comments on the page for this episode of Luke's English Podcast, teacherluke.co.uk. Go there, you'll find this episode, and you can see all of the... You can see a lot of things written there, including that first thing I said at the start of the episode that contained examples of all this management speak. So if you want to like actually read the phrases and see them, then you can just go to the page for this episode. That's it. I'm going to stop rambling on now and bring this episode to a close. But I suggest that you now move on to part two of this little series, and then you can carry on. Okay. But for now, it's just time for me to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.